You are listening to The Evidence Locker. Our cases have been researched using open source and archive materials. It deals with true crimes and real people. Some parts are graphic in nature, and listener discretion is advised. Each episode is produced with the utmost respect to the victims, their families, and loved ones. Moments after Patricia Stocker and her roommate heard the unmistakable sound of gunshots, they saw a man covered in blood, crawling towards the gate to their apartment complex on West Reno Avenue, Las Vegas. Patricia rushed over and tried to help the man, while her roommate, Victor Rizzi, called 911. When Patricia reached the man, he was badly injured and struggled to speak. In shock, he told her his name was Lee, and kept mumbling in disbelief. "I'm shot. I'm shot." Patricia recalled, "He raised up, and I put my legs under him. He put his arm across me and held on. He clenched his jaw. I said, 'No, you've got to open your mouth and let air in.' I said, 'It's okay,' and he relaxed. He let out his last breath of air, and it was over." Clenched in his hand was his keychain, with a picture of his 2-year-old daughter. It was important, Patricia felt, that Lee's family knew he was not alone when he passed away. The victim of this brutal slaying was Lee Redmond, a Las Vegas limo driver. In the months leading up to his murder, Lee tried to warn authorities about his unhinged stalker, but nothing was done to help him. Then, his worst fears came true. Charles Lee Redmond was born on the 12th of June, 1962, in Riverside, California. He had 2 sisters and a brother. He always looked out for his siblings and friends, and everyone who knew Lee liked him. In 1997, Lee's family had been living in Las Vegas for 17 years. Lee met a nurse called Renee, and they immediately hit it off. The couple married, and a year later, they welcomed their baby daughter, Lexis, into their family. A respected kickboxing champion, Lee was happy to settle down and enjoyed being a father. But he never gave up on his dreams and was set to turn pro, with a fight scheduled for the spring of 1998. Through his kickboxing connections, the 6'4" Lee landed a part-time job as a bodyguard at the MGM Grand Hotel Casino. Soon, the good-looking, always smiling and gentle man was offered work as a chauffeur for resort guests. He drove limousines around Las Vegas and brushed shoulders with many high rollers and celebrities. Stevie Wonder was one of Lee's regular clients for more than 2 years. The two of them struck up a friendship and always looked forward to seeing each other. But his work also exposed Lee to the other side of Las Vegas, a world of strip clubs and escorts. As a driver/bodyguard, Lee was often expected to enter strip clubs with his clients to make sure they were okay. He met all kinds of people through his work and always enjoyed talking to everyone. And so it came that one night he met an exotic dancer while waiting for one of his clients at the Girls of Glitter Gulch nightclub. Lee struck up a conversation with her, and she was instantly taken in by his kind manner. The dancer was 21-year-old Nicole Thornton. Nicole also hailed from Southern California, but unlike Lee, she did not have much of a family life. She came from a broken home and decided to move to Las Vegas for a fresh start. However, she was very lonely and struggled to settle in. She told Lee that she felt unsafe making her way home in the middle of the night after work. Lee had a strong older brother instinct and offered to drive her home after his shift that night. From that point on, whenever Lee took clients to the Girls of Glitter Gulch nightclub, she jumped at the opportunity to get a ride home. Lee was always jovial and friendly, and Nicole thought something was happening between them. She told Lee that she had feelings for him, and he told her he was happily married. Nicole saw it as a challenge and continued to pursue a romantic relationship with Lee. He realized her intention was to break up his marriage and politely turned her down again He made it clear that he was in a loving marriage and was committed to his young family. Lee never considered cheating on Renee and told Nicole so in no uncertain terms. But Nicole was undeterred. She called Lee at work every day, and most of the time he got himself out of the conversation, or he would ask his coworkers to cover for him. The daily calls escalated, and soon Nicole was calling almost on the hour. When Lee started avoiding her phone calls, she showed up at his work in person. It was very awkward for Lee, who was running out of excuses to get rid of her. Nicole was oblivious to the stress she caused him and continued to chase after him. In her mind, the only obstacle was Lee's wife, Renee, so she went after her, hoping to come between Lee and his wife. Nicole left a note on Renee's car, claiming that she was having an affair with Lee. She said that if Lee told Renee he was at work, he was actually with her. Renee knew that her husband of 3 years loved her and didn't think he would cheat on her. But then again, so many stories of infidelity start that way. Nicole's advances put a strain on their marriage for a while, but it didn't take long for Renee to understand her husband's situation, and she realized that Lee was genuinely stressed. He told her everything about Nicole and how she had been stalking him and pestering him everywhere he went. He did not tell Renee from the start because he didn't want to upset her and wanted to protect her from the onslaught. But there was no ignoring the likes of Nicole Thornton. No matter what Lee said or did, she would not back down. When Lee refused to give in to her attempts to seduce him, she gave him a voodoo charm. It was a small pouch with hair, her picture, and some other oddities. Was this an attempt to cast a spell over Lee that would make him fall in love with her? This was the last straw. Things were getting way too weird. On the 9th of June, he filed a report with Metro Police, outlining Nicole's harassing behavior. He was concerned about his family's safety when he left for work, and was afraid of what Nicole was capable of. There was no telling how far she was prepared to go. However, police were not very helpful, and did not think the situation was quite as dangerous as Lee described it. In fact, he told his friends and family that the duty officers laughed at him. Lee felt embarrassed and angry all at the same time. Nicole would not leave him alone, and police did not take him seriously. What was he supposed to do? Despite a restraining order against her, Nicole continued her stalking behavior. It put so much pressure on Lee and his young family, they decided to move. They had an unlisted phone number and address, and for a moment, Lee felt a bit safer. But Nicole found them, and in a fit of rage, slashed the tires of Lee's personal vehicle and broke the windows. Lee reported the incidents religiously, but police never followed up. The general attitude of police was that Lee, an imposing kickboxer, could surely handle a young and pretty dancer like Nicole Thornton. They did not realize how deranged she had become. Lee felt let down by the system, but was prepared to do whatever it took to protect his family. He confronted Nicole for the umpteenth time and begged her to stay away from him and his family. But instead of coming to her senses or apologizing, Nicole pulled out a firearm and threatened to shoot him if he didn't leave Renee for her. Lee forced her hand and challenged her to shoot him. But she didn't. Instead, she backed away in horror. The dramatic incident seemed to have shaken Nicole into reality, making her realize what she was doing. She had a gun pointed at the man she had become obsessed with. It was rock bottom. At this point, Lee thought that he finally got through to his stalker and was positive about getting on with his life. He hoped to leave the whole thing behind him and forget that he ever met Nicole Thornton. But Nicole would not let him forget about her. In the first week of October, she sent him a threatening letter. She also vandalized his car again. Lee was furious. In the early morning hours of Monday, October 13, 1997, after he finished work for the night, he drove the MGM Grand's limousine to Industrial Road, where it was stored, and picked up his personal car. Desperate to put an end to Nicole Thornton's harassment, he then drove to her apartment around 12:30 a.m. to plead with her to stop once more. police concluded that Nicole pulled her weapon on Lee during the argument. He did not engage in a struggle and chose to leave. As he walked away from her, heading downstairs from her second-floor apartment, she shot him in the back. Blood on the driver's side door handle of Lee's car indicated that he had made it to his car. However, Nicole must have followed him and fired a second shot, hitting him in his lower back. Nicole left him for dead and returned to her apartment. Inside, she scribbled a suicide note, underscoring her obsession with Lee. If she couldn't have him, no one could. Then she turned the gun on herself. Meanwhile, Lee must have realized he was in trouble and returned to the building, crawling, hoping someone would help. This is when Patricia Stalker and Victor Rizzi saw him and raised the alarm. Sadly, it was too late, and Lee passed away only minutes before the ambulance arrived at the scene. Lee was announced dead at 5:20 a.m. by the Las Vegas coroner's office. Renee was up all night waiting for Lee. She was used to him working late, but something didn't feel right. When a police officer knocked on her door with news about her husband's murder, her whole world fell apart. They asked her if she knew of anyone who would have wanted to harm her husband, and she told them about Nicole Thornton. Police realized that Lee was killed outside of Nicole's apartment and wanted to talk to her. When they entered her apartment some hours after Lee passed away, they discovered her body inside, with a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. Shortly after Lee's murder, Stevie Wonder was staying at the MGM Grand and requested his usual driver, the amicable Lee Redman. The pop star was distraught to learn about the murder and reached out to Renee and asked if he could sing at Lee's funeral. It was an emotional service at the new Bethel Baptist Church. Before Stevie Wonder sang, he said, "It was only through the love of Lee that I am here today. It is only through Lee's love that I am here as a friend. Our friendship was not based on who I was. It was based on being a friend. I knew instantly that this man would be someone special in my life. As much as I'm hurt that he is not here in the physical, I am so glad that he is looking down on us, protecting us." He then fared his friend farewell by singing, "I Won't Complain." And the congregation rose to their feet, clapping, crying, singing along. Stevie sang the heartfelt gospel song ending with, "God bless you, Lee." Lee's father, Ralph Redmond, respected his son for following his dreams and putting them into reality. He said, "Lee was not perfect. None of us are. He loved life." Lee's sister, Jamie Pomerleau, also thanked Patricia Stalker publicly for being there for her brother during his last moments alive. Lee's family struggled to come to terms with his death. 4 months before his death, he took out a restraining order against his stalker, who eventually became his killer. It was terribly frustrating to know that he feared for his safety, but nothing was done to save him. His sister Jamie said, "He tried to go through the right channels, and no one did anything. Then he tried to handle it himself. And then he was taken from his wife, his baby daughter, his family and friends, all because a demented woman who misread his kindness became obsessed with him and ultimately wanted him all to herself." If you'd like to read more about this case, have a look at the resources used for this episode in the show notes. Also, visit us on social media to see more about today's case. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also check out our channel on YouTube. If you like what we do here at Evidence Locker, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening right now, and kindly leave a 5-star review. This was the Evidence Locker. Thank you for listening.